हरि प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके बॉटम ऑफ 33 Vijaya, Gurudev, these nectarian instructions on Nama Tattva are entering our hearts and inspiring us with an unrelenting zest for chanting Sri Krishna Nam. We have now heard in detail about Shuddha Nam, Nama Bas, and Nama Parad, and will be eternally grateful to you for these nectarian explanations. Summary of Chapter 26, Introduction to Rasa Tattva. Vijaya Kumar soon left and stayed away from Navadvip for almost a month. Meanwhile, having received the consent of both Vrajanath and Vijaya Kumar to the marriage, the grandmother of Vrajanath did not waste a moment in finding a bride. On an astrologically auspicious date was fixed and the marriage duly performed. Soon after the marriage, Vijaya Kumar himself suddenly appeared in Navadvip. He had decided to go on a pilgrimage to Purushottam Kshetra, Puri, with a group that was leaving in a few days. Late in the afternoon, Vijaya Kumar and Vrajanath went to Sri Vasangana, took permission from Raghunath Das Babaji for Vijaya to visit Puri Dham. Raghunath Das Babaji directed Vijaya to take darshan of Sri Gopal Guru Goswami, a disciple of Sri Vakreshwara Pandit, and attentively receive instruction from him. On the way back from Mayapur, Vrajanath informed Vijaya Kumar of his desire to accompany him to Puri, which pleased Vijaya very much. When they told everyone in the house that they were going to do, Vijaya's grandmother, not wanting to be left behind, decided to also accompany them to Puri. Therefore, travel plans were worked out for the threesome, and when the hot days of the Jyeshtha month, May, June, were approaching, the pilgrims set out for Jagannath Puri. Soon after their arrival in Puri, Vijaya and Vrajanath set out for a few days of visiting the many nearby holy spots, to take dips in the ocean, to circumambulate the Dham, to honor Jagannath Prasad, and so forth. Then they went to see the house of Sri Kashi Mishra. First they offered obeisances to the Kadama, wooden clogs, and other personal paraphernalia of Sri Chaitanya that are kept there, and also to the Gambira room, which was the quarters of Sri Chaitanya during his final 12 years in Puri. The house of Sri Kashi Mishra is very spacious, and on one side of the complex there is the temple of Sri Radhakanta, with the residence of Sri Gopal Guru Goswami on the side opposite to the temple. Upon entering the room of Sri Gopal Guru Goswami, Vijaya Kumar and Vrajana threw themselves down upon the ground with humility, choking with emotions. This Gopal Guru, disciple of Vakresha that I know of, he's the one that Lord Chaitanya was in the toilet and he was chanting. And you know, like Vedic mantras, you can't chant them in the toilet. So he was applying the same rule to the holy name. But he couldn't stop chanting. So Gopal Guru, at the time, he was just named Gopal and he was about 8 years old. So he was a little kid, maybe less, 6 to 8 years old. He was outside the door. You know, heard all the commotion and all that. And then Lord Chaitanya came out holding his tongue with his hand, right? And Gopal Guru's kind of like, what's going on? And he's saying, you know, no, but I can't stop chanting. You're not supposed to chant in the toilet. So Gopal then told him, no, but the holy name is transcendental to all these rules. So you can be chanted anywhere, anytime, any place like this. So then Lord Chaitanya was so pleased that he from that day he was known as Gopal Guru, right? Because he gave those instructions to Lord Chaitanya. Observing their devotional attitude, Sri Gopal Guru Goswami reached down, raised them up, and embraced them. After they had taken seats, he asked them, "Where do you come from? Please tell me more about yourselves." They introduced themselves, and Srila Gopal Guru Goswami was overwhelmed with joy when he heard that they were who they were and from where they had come. Upon hearing the word Navadvipa, he said, "I feel very fortunate today to see such Dhamvasis, and I am eager to learn how Raghunath Das Babaji, Gaurachandra Das, and the other Vaishnavas of Sri Mayapur are doing." Raghunath Das Babaji always reminds me so much of my Sikshu Guru, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami. Srila Gopal, Srila Gopal Guru Goswami sent for his disciple, Sri Jnanachandra, and told him to feed the two honorable guests with prasad. Jnanachandra is also, I think there's a padati on deity worship that has been established by Jnanachandra. Sri Jnanachandra and told him to feed the two honorable guests with prasadam. Srila Goswami said, "Raghunath Das Babaji is a great pundit. Always be sure to follow his advice carefully. If you have any questions, come tomorrow at noon. After the midday offering, join us for Mahaprasad. Then we will meet and discuss your questions." Offering their respects to Srila Gopal Guru Goswami, Vijay and Vrajanath returned to their residence in Harachandi Sahi. Vijay Kumar and Vrajanath came to the Radhakanta temple the next day at the arranged time. After honoring Mahaprasad, they went to see Gopal Guru Goswami and offered obeisances at his feet. They asked, "Prabhu, we are keen to learn Rasa Tattva, the truth of spiritual mellows. If we are allowed to hear about Rasa Tattva in Krishna Bhakti from your lips, that will be a great blessing for us. You are the chief preceptor of the Nimananda disciplic line, and in line from Chaitanya, you are the bona fide successor of Srila Srup Damodar Goswami. We offer our respects to you, as you are a world acharya. Whatever we hear from you about Rasa Tattva will crown our research and study with success." So he is showing is that you have the two aspects, the Diksha line and the Siksha line. So then, as long as the Diksha line is connected, it works. But the point is, the Siksha then has to be the Siksha that is being given by the acharyas. Right? Does that make sense? So, the element of family guru, that there isn't that connection, then that doesn't apply. Right? But if that connection is there, then it's siksha that's important. Right? So then, hearing proper siksha, then the whole process works. Right? One doesn't have to worry. It means it's an ideal if the diksha and the siksha guru are the same. But if not, it can be two separate. It doesn't really matter. Like that. It makes it easier for us because we're always looking for that one place where everything comes from and like that. You know, the one, you know, Costco. One shop has everything, right? Like that. But the point is it's not always like that, especially when you start to get up into better stuff, you know. You have to go to one shop, then they have one item. You go to another shop, they have another item. And they're always at opposite ends of town, right? You know, like that, whatever it is. I think they work it out. Hey, we're setting up here. Oh, great, I'll set up on the other side over there, you know, like that. You know? I think maybe they have some connection with the petrol stations also, you know, so like that, you know. Is that, yes.
Is that the reason why he has blessings from the Diksha Guru to go to a human place? So it would indicate some person who could distract
him? Yes. Well, they wanted to go there, and he said, while you're there, then visit this Gopal Guru. Because naturally they've heard up to a certain level. So to now hear Rasa Tattva from Gopal Guru, then that's very nice. But as we see, Gopal Guru, he respects Raghunath Das Babaji like Raghunath Das Goswami. You know, because you're talking about those who are just the associates, the younger associates of Lord Chaitanya. All the seniors have already left, like that. And there's a few of them left. Gopal Guru is one. You know, that Nisinga Brahmachari is one, like that. So there are still some left. It's taking place just at that time. So you do have that element that's there, but it's not specific like that. You know what I'm saying? It's not specific, I can't take you any farther, so now you go to him. It's not one of those. This is just a matter, since you're going there, you should take advantage of the association of Gopal Gurus. Like that. Because they're all very similar. Like that. Is that... Srila Goswami was extremely pleased to have quite unexpectedly found two such worthy disciples. He said, "May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who mercifully appeared in Navadvip to acknowledge the Gaudiyas of Bengal and the Udiyas of Orissa as his own, Sri Nimai Pandit, the son of Sachimata, bless us with spiritual bliss." I'm sure that's an interesting prayer in Bengali. "May Srila Sarup Damodar, who is the source of constant ecstasy for Sri Chaitanya, by his flawless service in describing Madhurya Rasa, appear in our hearts. May Srila Vakreshwara Pandit, who captivated Nimai Pandit with his scintillating dancing, and who rectified Sri Devananda Pandit by his causeless compassion, shower benedictions upon us." Right? Because this is also the Siksha line coming from Sarup Damodar. Because Sarup Damodar then would always be with Lord Chaitanya. And so any of his ecstatic moods and all that, he'd be giving support. Right? So if anybody knows the Rasa Tattva, it will be Sarup Damodar. And so he's in that Siksha line. Rasa is an unparalleled and most esoteric tattva. Because, right? See, now we've already established, it's very important in here. It means if questions come up, ask them. But think first, is that the point is rasa is not generated from anything you do other than the desire to please Krishna. It's not by your particular sadhana. It's not by the particular activity or the quality of the ingredients. That's not where it comes from. Right? It comes from just the interaction. You know, just like there's the saying, money brings money, or money generates money. So rasa generates rasa. It doesn't come from something else. Does that make sense? That's the whole point, is that it's very important to understand this, is that it's not dependent upon anything else. It doesn't mean that the anything else is not there. That's the form. That's the culture. Right? The culture is the form that you use to express rasa. Right? Tattva is what describes all those elements of, you know, what is in the culture and through which you're exchanging the relationship and the taste. Does that make sense? So the thing is you can't separate them, but at the same time as they are separate entities, just like anything. Krishna's energy are non-different, but at the same time, they're different. You can tell the difference. Does that make sense? You know, it's like this column and that column doing exactly the same thing, same function, same touch, the same everything, but you can tell the difference between this column and that one. So in the same way as Krishna and his energy are non-different, but you can tell the difference. You know, just like between him and Balaram. The only difference between Balaram and Krishna is Balaram is white and Krishna is black. That's it. There is no other difference. But you can tell the difference because of the mood. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the point, is that even though they may be the same quality, you can still tell the difference by the mood. Like, I don't know if it means, you know, how much experience is there. Like, you have Jananivas and Pankajungri. They're identical twins, so they look the same. But you can, if you know the mood, you can tell the difference. Right? Does that make sense? You know, that's... So rasa is an unparalleled and most esoteric tattva. Rasa tattva is the fully bloomed flower of the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. When Krishna Bhakti reaches the pinnacle of purity and becomes dynamically active, it is transformed into Krishna Bhakti Ras, the mellows of devotion to Krishna. So why at the pinnacle of purity? Right? Because that's something we will catch. Okay, yes, when I'm freed from all sins, this, that, that's what's going to cause the bhakti. No, it just means that the pinnacle of purity means the pinnacle of being absorbed in Krishna. Right? If you're not absorbed in Krishna, what are you absorbed in?
Maya.
Yeah, Maya. So the point is the only reason for being pure is there's no absorption in Maya. The absorption is just in Krishna. But to not be absorbed in Maya and not absorbed in Krishna, that's doesn't, right? Is that, it doesn't do much for you, right? So the only reason that there's an emphasis on purity is because then you'll be absorbed in Krishna. Does that make sense? It doesn't stand on its own. Right? It's a dependent, it's a secondary element. So that pinnacle pure, now that purity then into the pastimes reflects the purity of the mood. That the whole idea is that it's only for pleasing Krishna. So in that way then we're looking at it from the positive. The negative is pure, there's no mundane, but it's still negative. Right? But when you took at the positive, that it's pure because it's only, the exchange is only to please the other person. Right? It's the perfection of sacrifice. It's the perfection of austerity. It's the perfection of charity, compassion, all these things. Mm. Does that make sense? Because this is in the positive. It's not like in the material world, it's in the negative. You're trying to get, like I'm giving in charity, that's because I'm actually a miser. If it was up to me, I'd keep everything for myself. But it's a good thing to do. The Shastras recommended everyone else is doing it. If I don't do it, it's going to look stupid. You know, so therefore I'm giving in charity. But it's only to remove the negative. Right? The negative of it's all mine. I'm the, you know, control of the universe and everything's here for me. So I have to learn to share. I have to learn, okay, I do this sacrifice. I have to do it to please this other person. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's austerity. I'd rather just do whatever I like, but I have to do what I'm supposed to do. So all these things are to remove the negative. So that's why they're important. But they're not as, but it's still secondary. The primary is that you're doing it to please Krishna. You're doing the activity, the sacrifices to please Krishna. Right? The charity means you're sharing whatever you have with Krishna. Does this make sense? The austerity is you're doing your duties that please Krishna. You see? There's two sides of this, yes.
So if a person does those other things, removes the negative, are they more likely to take up bhakti or not necessarily?
It's not necessary. Taking up bhakti is association of devotees. Because otherwise, smartas, then they would be, you know, very devotional. But they're not. You know, they're very pure, they're very nice. If you meet them, all the etiquettes, everything, you go to their house, super clean, very nicely done. Like that, but no devotion.
So then we're distinguishing Supriti from Bhakti Supriti.
Yes.
Bhakti Supriti is then
Yes, so that's the point, is in the association of devotees, you get the act, that's real purity, because it's positive. While the other one is removing the negative. But the point is the rule is always remember Krishna, never forget. So never forget means don't allow the negative to become, you know, to overwhelm. And always remember means the positive should be the prominent, right? But that doesn't mean the secondary is given up. That's the only problem in this, is that, well, okay, if it's not this, then it must be that, I drop this. You know? Or if it's important, then, you know, it clouds the primary. If the secondary is important, it clouds the primary. Or if the primary is only important, I don't need the second at all. This is called niyamagraha. Right, not understanding or unnecessarily be attached to the rules. Right, so that's what we have to avoid. Then this path becomes, we can see it's a very esoteric, it's a very fine path in the middle. One side means on the two sides are in niyamagraha. You know, that it's only the primary, we don't need the secondary. That's called the sahajas. And we only need the second, that means the secondary is important, you know, at the expense of the primary. That's the smartas. So that path in the middle, that's very, very fine. One has to be able to catch that with the intelligence, right? After a while, the emotions will be in line with that, so it'll be easy. But until then, it has to be the intelligence that directs. Because otherwise, on the mundane platform, the emotions direct, it's always going to be bad, right? But if on the spiritual platform, the emotions predominate, then that's good. Yes?
When someone likes to give charity, but mainly because it makes them feel good, so that means that
Yes. It means devotional service. Yes, because that means then they'll actually means if they're getting taste from giving in charity, they'll get more taste from giving to the devotees and to Krishna. The point is it doesn't matter how it starts. That's the good part about it. It doesn't matter. We'll say, oh no, but he's doing that, but his mentality is this. It doesn't matter if it's devotional, because our idea is that since he's doing devotional service, doesn't have the right attitude, better he's honest and doesn't do devotional service, right? But technically, that's neophyte down to the stage where it actually borderlines on demoniac, because it doesn't really understand what is devotional service. We take devotional service as an activity of piety, of karma. If it's not done right, you know, does that make sense? Mm. But generally that would mean we're seeing a flaw in what they're doing. Or we're so jealous that they're doing it so nicely, and so then we have to write it off that, oh, it's this. But these are all neophyte perspectives. The point is that he's getting benefit from doing the form even though the attitude isn't there. He'll get more benefit if he corrects the attitude. But this idea is that, you know, does that make sense? Because otherwise, if we really applied that, oh, we're being practical, why don't we go into so-called civilized society and just go through it? Everybody there is doing what they're supposed to do, but they really would rather not. They're all standing in the line. They would rather just rush to the front. You know what I'm saying? So if we're being real, then the third world countries are actually real. And the first world, they're totally artificial. I mean, totally. With capital T, maybe capital all the letters. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, I'd like to do that, but I can't do that, so nobody should do that. Right? Because I can at least understand it'll be a bit of a riot, and I wouldn't like that. You know, because I don't actually have enough emotions to be overwhelmed by the emotion that I won't notice it. I'm so dry, actually. Like that. So it's actually the lack of qualification in actual relationships and emotions that many times is the reason that, you know, and the false ego of that, you know, I'm superior. You understand? If you really get into it, it gets really bad looking. It doesn't look good. So the whole point is that's why duties are there. Because why would we say it's an austerity? Because you don't want to do them. You'd rather not do your duty. You'd rather just be totally self-centered, right? So, but that's why austerity is there. And then, okay, I'm doing my duty. But then the point is that it should be for the other's benefit, that sacrifice. Okay, I'm doing my duty, that's enough. But no, it should be to please the other person. Okay, you know, so we make that step. Okay, now I've done it to please the other person. I've gotten result. But now it comes charity. You have to give them the result. Oh, man. You know, it's like, you know, okay, at least I did the austerity, the sacrifice, but I get the result. No, you have to give that away also. And so then it's kind of like, hey, you know what I'm saying?
What's in it?
Yesterday I met someone and he wanted to give him charity. And he was like saying, yeah, everyone knows that in Canada, you know, I give to nations and I treat the poor. So he came to India and he asked me, do you know any good causes for feeding the poor?
Yeah.
But I also suggested that, you know, that if you mothers here, they have children in Gurukul.
Okay.
But that would be for him, like you say, that he would have to give the result to someone else.
Yeah, yeah. Because the thing is if it's to a person, then you actually have to be personal. If it's just you're feeding the poor. Who are the poor? It's impersonal. You know, I'm feeding kids and, you know, where is it now? It used to be Biafra and then Somalia. Where's the new place?
The hot spot, yeah.
Yeah. So whatever it is, you know what I say. So you're doing that, but you don't know the people. And even if you do go there, it's just the faces sea of kids, you know. So, you know, and they'll always arrange to put the cute ones in front, right? Like that. You know, so then, you know, it's nice, but it's just a group. There's no actual personal interaction. That's too much for most people. So that's why you see they can impersonally give for years, but to actual specific people, they can only do it for a short time. Like that. Yes.
Is it also because there comes some kind of responsibility with direct personal
interest? Yeah, there's a response. That's why generally, like in educational institutions, they have the, you know, John Hopkins, you know, trust for, you know, this, you know, so like that. And then all they do is there's 10 seats there. He's put an endowment, it pays for 10 seats. And then the school chooses who goes there. So you don't actually have a personal relationship with them. That works. People can relate to that. But if it's actually you're sponsoring this one or sponsoring that one, then it only works if they can actually control the lives of the people, have them over whenever they want to, you know, take the kid out, take them on vacation, they do things like that. Then they can relate, because then it's mine. But otherwise, it's my charity, right? Then it's impersonal enough that they don't have to get involved, but at the same time, the benefit's there. Does that make sense? So this is the difficulty, is the you know, just in general, the material society is like this, but just the modern society is always more like this. It's more exaggerated, but they cover it so nicely with nice, you know, words and stuff like that. So then it doesn't appear to be so bad, you know. But then they'll point out that the Vedic is. But that's just not understanding. So why we're saying this is that the point is you have to have both. The neophyte devotee, it's either it's all this and we don't care for the rules, or it's all about the rules. If you're not following the rules, you're not actually even a devotee. That's the extent that we're dealing with. Right? So that's why it's very important to understand is that the one doesn't get rid of the other one. The two go together. The primary and the secondary go together. It works. You know, the food and the plate works really well together. Right? The food's the primary thing. You wouldn't walk around carrying a plate. But there are people who have no plate. They'll walk around carrying the food. Right? So then the hand becomes the secondary. But the point is the secondary is important simply because it gives that support. Right? But at the same time, it's a dependent support. Right? The plate only has meaning because food goes on it. Food has meaning. It doesn't matter what the utensil, but plates only have meaning because food goes on them. So it's giving the support, but it's actually secondary. You know what I'm saying? Just like, no, but we pay for all this. If it wasn't for our money, you wouldn't be able to do this. But the point is if we didn't have this, you would have nothing to do with your money. You understand? So people always make this mistake. The secondary is more important. Yes.
Is it just because of the person's nature that they think that way?
So no, it's just a material world. It's just material consciousness. Because I'm the controller and enjoyer, but controller and enjoyer of what? Because rasa is Krishna and that interaction between the devotees. But I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at the facilities, the opportunities for enjoyment. So the situation I'm in, the elements of the situation, you know, myself, the other person, I'm simply looking at elements of opportunity, right? So that's what your modern, you know, marketing and all these things are taking advantage of, is that people are seeing simply the form, and they're putting that into the front because people will easily buy that. If you say it's the primary thing, then most people won't catch it. They just won't, you know? So then it's just a phenomena, general phenomena of the material world. That's why anybody can have it. Now, some will have it to more extreme because that'll be the particular conditioning they have, right? But and some may have it less due to that. But everybody has it to some degree, right?
So, if somebody is erring on the side of rules and regulations, could we say they have a consciousness of control, so they're going to use the rules and regulations to control karma and karma. So this control the whole process, and they'll become Krishna conscious by the same way they achieved anything in the material world.
You could say basically, but the point is they'll achieve a state of purity. They'll achieve that liberated state. But prema, it has to be actually the conscious that you want to actually love Krishna. So the point is why the process works with the neophyte devotee, right? Is that they do have that concept, but just much of the time they forget it. But it only takes a few moments of remembering that one actually advances very quickly. So just a few moments here and there, they add up till after a while that becomes more and more prominent, and then they come to the platform of Nishtha, right? So that's what's so nice about the devotional process, is that it works despite our flaws, you know. It's, you know, how you say, foolproof.
Bhakti-proof.
Yes. Yeah, so it works. So then, that's what's so nice about it. So that's why it's said that the preachers give association to the devotees. Because those moments when they can get them to forget their absorption in the external and just focus on actually the real devotional element, those things are very good. You know, so we might say it's sad that for people to get absorbed in a kirtan, you have to have a kirtan mela rather than just free time. Before it was when you had free time, then you did kirtan, right? But now it's like you have free time, but, you know, you're using it for all kinds of things, so now you have to have a kirtan mela. But at the same time, because it's a kirtan mela, they're going to forget about all their other stuff, generally. You know, I mean, you do still have texting and stuff like that. But, you know, like that. That you get absorbed. So even though you get more absorbed there, so you really appreciate it. Though previously you might have those absorptions a little bit all the way along. Right, but it adds up. So, but then at the same time, because there's so much more attention on the mundane arrangements, then this is more attention on the spiritual arrangements. After a while, you start to see that difference. So, if you can't catch it subtly, you know, when it's bigger, you can see the difference. You know, that's a mode of goodness is you can tell if there's any oscillation, you can tell the difference. You know, the mode of passion has to be a little bit more, mode of goodness, and even more than that. You know, so that's the.
Ignorance has to be more.
Yeah, have to be more, because otherwise you don't really notice it. No. You know what I'm saying? You're sitting there and, you know, something's been said. They always say that. But then when, you know, the plate goes flying by, you know, whizzes by your nose and smashes on the wall, then it's kind of like, ooh, she's upset. You know, great revelation, right? You know? Well, some in the mode of goodness is just maybe a look or something, oh, you know. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of how much is there. Does that make sense? So the point is as you add more passion, then you have to have more of a difference. You know? You know, so it works for the Malecha culture. The extremeness of it, but the problem is it also doesn't develop. It doesn't have good habits. Means when you go to the kirtan, you're absorbed. But when you're not in the kirtan, where is it seen? You know. So then, you know, unless you put it on your iPod and listen to it all day, then that's okay. But it doesn't have the natural. That's why the culture's there, so that it's worked in naturally throughout the life, and so then it makes it easier. Is that?
Now that you're on the kirtan subject, can you just mention
but remember that we're on rasa as a subject. You know what I'm saying?
I'll ask it, you don't have to answer.
No, just throw it out. You do with it as you like. You know, because if you don't answer, you're the bad guy. At least I did my part. I asked the question.
Same with juicy enough. I heard that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that. When you do kirtan, you know, it's not that you like it or you like the melody or like this or that. It's like bhoga, it's for Krishna. Krishna
yeah.
But it seems in our culture it's the other way around. You know, I like that melody, I'm into it. Oh, so-and-so's leading and then I walk out. I don't like the leading.
Yeah. No, it's there. It means there's what he's talking. I mean, there's two aspects that are going there. One is just that offering to Krishna. So before they could do nice things for Krishna, but they wouldn't absorb themselves in what they're doing. You know, which means, in other words, you're doing something nice for Krishna, so then it's more complex, more developed. It's not that you're enjoying that complexity. It's a matter of that will just make it nicer for Krishna. So you can play fancy beats, use all these different things and all that, because it'll make it nicer for Krishna. But we get into the beats of this, you know, the whole jam and all that kind of thing. That's what I was talking about before, is we see the external like that. So that's one aspect. So it's mixed, that it's not just for Krishna, it's also for us. But then the other aspect is that when you have in ruchi, there's two levels of ruchi. One level of ruchi is that it doesn't matter. It's a holy name. You're happy with it. So it doesn't matter if the tune's great, the singer's great, the arrangements are great. It's a holy name. The other is that it requires some actually nice arrangements. Then you can absorb yourself. It means you have taste, but it has to be nice arrangements, right? Then you'll absorb yourself. So that's why then, in any case, you try to make nice arrangements, because it then addresses the broadest audience like that. Because you're going to have probably more who are need a particular requirement of taste to appreciate it, and there's going to be less of those who it doesn't matter. You know, like, because that was known, an example of that was Hanuman. He just likes the holy name. So when Lab and Kush were fighting with Lord Ramachandra, so the thing is they're the ones that recite the Ramayana, right? Because they were given the Ramayana to recite. So they know everything about everybody. So they know everyone's strengths and weaknesses. So then when they started this fight with Ramachandra, then, you know, his different personalities come. You know, Hanuman and Lakshmana and everybody else. But they already know what their strength and weakness is, so they play on the weakness, and that way they defeat everybody. So Hanuman, they know he's got such a taste for the name, it doesn't matter the arrangement. So Lab and Kush just send the other kids from the ashram down to the side of the river to start a kirtan. Right? So, you know, they're not going to be very good at it, they're just a bunch of kids. But the point is that, you know, they're doing kirtan, so Hanuman comes in there, all right, where are they? Hey, wow, you know, and just disappears to the kirtan, and he's sitting down with the kids, and it's all good, like that. So, yeah. So you do have that difference in taste, you know. But the point is rasa is not developed by what's there. It's not the tune. It's the like now and again. Sometimes you hear those who were doing Hari Nam before, you know, 70-71. The tunes they'll use, the way they'll do it, it's totally different. Because for them it was just, we're chanting the holy name, you know, and they just go out. It's just a tune that everybody could sing. Generally it was a tune Prabhupada sang, but they couldn't catch the raga, so all the notes have been changed. But you wonder, where does this unique tune come from? And what it is they tried to get what Prabhupada was singing, like that. And so they're in a totally different category. You know, you have all this fancy stuff, all the different parts and all the different things like that, and the Burnham beats, and they come along and they just couldn't care less about any of that. Right? They just sing, they have the tune, they're so happy, and, you know, they dance totally different. Everything's different, right? So it was about chanting. It had nothing to do with, that's why anybody could lead the kirtan, anybody could play drum, it didn't matter. But not that you can't make that develop. Prabhupada, when he find a good mridanga player in India, he'd ask them to come to America and teach the devotees. So it was a matter of, that's the culture. So, because the culture is for Krishna's pleasure, therefore it's natural to develop it. You know, good cooks, everything like that, to develop the culture. How to dress and behave. Then people knew it, he'd have Prabhupada would ask them to learn from them and teach them. You know, so it's natural to develop it, but the point is it's based on that attitude that it's just for Krishna, like what you're saying. So.
Question was okay?
Yeah. Just on the edge there. Just got the thing. Now if you bring up, no, but the GBC, then you've gotten off the mark there. That's it. Okay, Vrajanath, now his question. Is eligibility for Krishna Bhakti Ras gained through previous practice? Goswami, this question does not have a simple answer. I shall have to elaborate upon the subject. You should try to understand it. You must have heard about Krishna Rati, loving attachment to Krishna, otherwise known as Stai Bhava, steady mood of devotion, from your Gurudev. When Stai Bhava is fanned and nurtured for a long time by Samagri Bhava, the ingredients of rasa, it evolves into Krishna Bhakti Rasa, the sublimely relishable mellows of Shuddha Bhakti to Sri Krishna. So here Stai Bhava is the bhava that you have towards Krishna. And so here it's when it's nourished by Samagri Bhava, the ingredients of rasa. The ingredients are all these different elements. So that's where we see is that the secondary is important. Right? As a support. The Stai Bhava is the main thing that's fixed. Stai means fixed. So all those different ingredients around, seeing the different devotees doing different things, the activities they do, all these aspects, Samagri means ingredients. So then it starts to nurture and then it comes up, because from those will come the Vishai. Vishai is within Vibhava. Yeah, will come up as vibhava. It is the ingredients of rasa. When those remind you of Krishna, like it says here, it involves into Krishna bhakti. So then from that, when they remind you of Krishna, then it becomes vibhava. Otherwise, they're just there, then that's that samagri bhava. It's just ingredients that maybe, you know, like that. It's the right thing, so you're in the right environment. Then the idea is eventually you'll catch it. You know? Does that make sense? Yes. Means everything connected with devotional service. You know what I'm saying? The devotees, you know, the program, the chant, all these different things. It's just that you're around the activities that those can remind you of Krishna. But then that mood is fixed that you want to serve Krishna. So here they're saying stai bhava, so stai means fixed. Right? So it means specifically it'll mean on the platform of bhava, that you're fixed in your eternal relationship with Krishna. But below that stage means you're fixed in devotional service. Does that make sense? So in its pure form, then it will be applied in bhava. In its, you know, almost like that, it'll be in the Madhyama platform. You know, just like you have bhakta praya, means the neophyte is almost like a devotee, because they're doing all the activities of the devotee, but they don't quite have the mood. Right? So then your Madhyama is like bhava praya. It's almost like bhava. They're fixed now in the activities, but they don't quite have that mood of bhava. They have the mood of a devotee, of pure devotion, but they don't quite have that mood. Does that make sense? So each one is like bhava is almost prema. Right? They're doing all the activities. They're actually in the pastimes, but they don't quite have the mood yet. You catch that. You learn that from the other devotees. So in other words, all the ingredients of rasa, everything that rasa could be based on, you know, all the interactions, all the situations, everything like that, those are ingredients for rasa. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Vrajanath, kindly speak about stai bhava and samagri bhava. Srila Gurudev has explained bhava to us, but we have not yet heard how the mingling of samagri bhava with stai bhava produces Krishna bhakti ras. Goswami. Bhava bhakti and Krishna rati flourish in the heart of the devotee because of his involvement in bhakti in his present or previous lifetime. So here, Krishna rati, bhava bhakti, because also bhava is known as rati. Because it's the same act. Bhava is the stage from when you're liberated to when you develop praying. That stage in between. Now, in that means you're on the platform of bhava, so the ecstasies are manifest, but you're also developing that rati or attachment to Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's an overlap. The two are going on at once. So if there's more just the appreciation of the ecstasy is not as much connecting it to Krishna, it's at the lower end. There's more the appreciation of the connection to Krishna and not as much worrying about the ecstasy, that's at the higher end. Does that make sense? So that's why bhava is sometimes called, you know, just bhava itself, or it's called rati. Right? Before, as Raghunathas Babaji was explaining, that they call them, it means Rupa Goswami, others call them the same. Right, Bharat Muni Natya Shastra. Then they call them the same when they're defining rasa. Right, so then he's saying, so I will also call it the same, because you have two different elements. It's two elements of the same thing. Does that make sense? You know, if I say it's my car or I say it's my ride, you know, it's the same vehicle. But they're dealing with two different flavors, right? One's the car. This is my car. This is my car. I have the facility. This is my ride. This is what I go around in. This is my prestige, right? You understand? It's the same thing, right? Yeah. Okay. Bhava, bhakti, and Krishna rati flourish in the heart of the devotee because of his involvement in bhakti in his present or previous lifetimes. They embody spiritual bliss, which at a mature stage transforms into Krishna bhakti ras. Right? Because everything, when it matures, turns into prema. Mm. Prema is all these aspects of before. You have the faith, you have the association of devotees, you're following the process, you have a taste, you have attachment, ecstasy. But when they're in the mature stage, that's called prema. So before that, then there's a hierarchy of how it starts. So Shraddha is the basis. Without that, nothing else can happen. But as it goes, then you have more interest in the process. You get more taste from the process. Okay. Samagri Bhava is divided into four groups, known as Vibhava, that which causes the appearance of Krishna Rati. Anubhava, subsequent ecstasy. Sattvika Bhava, constitutional ecstasy. And Vyavachari Bhava, aggressive ecstasy, also known as Sanchari Bhava. Continuously existing ecstatic symptoms. Okay, so now we're getting into a full description of bhava, right? Because before we just dealt with bhava as a generic stage. Now we're getting into actually the parts of bhava. So there's the sthayi bhava, which is the relationship you have. Then there is the, the samagri bhava, which is the other four. That those then make the sthayi bhava, you know, how you say, between the two of them, then one tastes love of Krishna. Does that make sense? That makes sense. So these all go together like this. So now we're getting into your latter chapters of Nectar Devotion. Now you're starting with part two, right? Part two, three, and four. That's what deals with here. Okay? Vibhava, which is also known as Krishna Prema, is of two divisions. Alambana, basic cause, and Uddipan, awakening stimuli. Alambana is the basic cause that gives rise to Rati, divine love, and is divided into two parts, Vishaya, beloved, and Ashraya, the lover. He's just going, oh yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, so you have, okay. Thus one who possesses, okay. Yes, one who possesses Rati is Ashraya, means okay. Within Vibhava is known as Krishna Prema. This is what's going to be what gives rise to it. So it's called Krishna Prema because it's what actually makes it awaken or arise in the heart. It means it's already there, but it's able to be appreciated, right? Does that make sense? So therefore, there's a non-difference. It means the thing that causes it and the underlying feelings itself. You know, it's just like the mother has an affection towards the child, but now if the child comes into view, then that emotion is able to come out. Does that make sense? It's not that it's the cause of it. So that's why it's called Krishna Prema. Right? Because it is the manifestation of that love. Right? But it's in the mechanics of actually seeing, or some way the senses are connected to something connected to Krishna, right? So that's alambana, right? Alambana is just that process, right? Now within that you have the ashray and the vishay. So now he's saying here is that thus the one who possesses rati or the attachment to Krishna is the ashray, like mother just showed, it is the ashray of parental rasa. Right, because she has parental rasa. And the one who is the aim of that love means Krishna, he's the Vishay. Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. We said something wrong?
Have to give a class for the Russians.
Oh, okay. Okay, it wasn't that, hey, wait a minute.
Okay. I've got another Uddipana.
Okay. Does this make sense? Mm. So then Krishna is the one who is the shelter. I mean, is who is the aim of that love. In other words, there's a shelter of the love, means who's holding that love. And then there's who the love is directed at. Mm. Does that make sense? So the Vishaya is the one who the love is directed at. And the one who has that love, that's the Ashraya. Right? Yeah. This is how love works. Right? Means this is the mechanic. Now we're getting into the mechanics of how love and affection work within the world. But the point is here It's pure, so it's free from any contamination of doing it for yourself. It's only to please Krishna. Well, in the material world, we use these mechanics for ourselves. The reactions, all this sthayi bhava, all these bhavas will be the same. What somebody does here, you know, in the sanchari bhavas or in the other, is the same as what happens there. It's just not as intense. The sanchari bhavas are easy because you just see what the body's doing. But the sattvika bhavas, all that, you know, standing of hairs on the end and this and that, can't talk. So you get it to some degree here, but not as intense as what it is there. Yes?
And when it's just for clarification, Jiva reflects the good qualities, is reflecting the qualities. Does it also reflect the love of the infernal associates?
On one sense you can say yes, but they themselves have that love. But the point is that, see, the thing is you can have that attitude, but being able to do the activities to that degree, that's the other. So you're only taking part in it. So you're reflecting that love. You're reflecting those activities. But at the same time, because you're reflecting, means there's a qualification, right? The mirror only can reflect if it's actually clean. Right? So the better the quality of the mirror, the better the quality of the reflection. You know, that's mentioned in that group, in that song, Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, means that love that Rupa has, then that is entering the heart and it's shining back. Right? So that's why it's so important to be in the association of advanced devotees. Right? Because then we're able to reflect that affection. Does that make sense? Yes.
The material world being a perverted affection.
Right.
Those feelings by the jivas in the material conception,
right,
are not experienced because the jiva takes the purusha bhava, right?
So they take the purusha bhava, so then it means you have to be a purusha to actually do it well. You know, Krishna is, so he can do it well. Shiva is, he can do it well. Right? You know. So we're not. You know, so then but the point is, the sense is duties, then you have to learn the duties. You have to learn how to do it. Does that make sense? That's why there's duties. The man has to learn what are the duties of the Purusha. Right? Because he doesn't know. See, now, the gross comes from the subtle. Right? So in other words, you have the right attitude, then you know how, then the manifestation will be very natural. Right? So, women, they have the attitude of being a woman. So the natural manifestation of it, you don't have to teach them. Three-year-olds know how to, you know, you said something wrong, how to just ignore you. They're only three, but they know how to do it. They know how to flip their hair. They know how to do all those things. You don't have to teach them. You know, that's what, say you're sitting there and then, you know, like that, and then the little girl does some of those, like, wait a minute, you know. That they know how to, because they have the attitude. They are female. They know how to do it, so you don't have to teach them. You have to teach them how to do it nicely, so it's in a higher grade, right? Because dogs also do it, you know? I remember when I was sitting in Vrindavan, and there's, you know, you have the neighborhood dogs, right? So it was Kartik, so it was, you know, excess neighborhood dog season. And so the female dog, she's got at least 15 dogs running after her. And she's ignoring them all. They're really trying to get her attention. Like that, because I was from that area, so the dog recognized me as one of the, you know, the local humans, you know. So then, you know, with great happiness, she comes running over and this and that, and, you know, all the ecstatic symptoms and all that, that all the other, you know, 15 dogs are trying to get some interaction. But she's not about to show that to them, right, you know. But, you know, so, but at the same time, you're trying to keep them interested, right, you know, but at the same time as you don't want them to get too aggressive, you know, so, you know, you kind of show it, but direct it at someone else, so there's that kind of hope, but at the same time, it's not you, you know, it's a whole trip, like that. So the dog was doing now that, right, perfectly, but the problem, they're doing it as a dog. So that's the thing, is girls should learn how to do that as humans, not as dogs. Right? That's what culture is for. So the point is, the girls say, we want to be free. That's called a dog. Yeah, it means there are plenty of them. They're all over the place. So if that's what you want, yeah, then there's humans. It's another thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's the same thing. Mechanics are the same. We take it that, oh no, it's only a human life. No, all species have it. You know? Maybe a bit subtle in a, you know, micro, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then there's the training, because the natural point is feminine, because the soul is feminine. Right? So it doesn't actually know how to deal as Purusha. Right? It has the idea, I'm Purusha, so they do all kinds of stupid things. So that's why all the men who are untrained always do the same stupid things. Right? Does that make sense? So you have to train them how to do the natural, you know, what's actual, you know, and then it should be applied as human. Because you can also apply it as dog. Right? Yes.
So a gay person would artificially manifest this.
Artificially?
I mean, we say that you don't have to train a woman into having these female or these feminine.
Do you really want to go there?
I'm trying to... Okay, this was actually a stepping stone. There's no rasa there. Is that true?
Means there's some variety of rasas there, but the point is it doesn't have its natural object, as we were discussing before. So the manifestation of it, though it kind of the same, its object is not right, so certain things just don't come out properly. You know what I'm saying? Because both are trying to take the masculine role, but both are trying to take the feminine role. You know, you're supposed to have one as the masculine, one's the feminine. Like that. So it means then you have, it's a natural, it works. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you're dealing with something, but the point is, as we said, the rasa can be applied at so many levels. You know, worms are, you know, both male and female. You know what I'm saying? So they have, you know, both these things going on at once. You know, so I'm saying, so it means it's there in the creation. If you want to have that mentality, it's there. Does that make sense? You know? Yes.
Maharaj, well, Prabhupada explained how both male and female in the material world are trying to be Purusha, trying to
yes,
be
yes.
So to what degree do we experience the feminine energy in the material world? Is it there at all? Or?
No, it's there. It's just this Purusha Shakti. It's just trying to control. Means, in other words, the feminine is secure because it's dependent on the masculine, so therefore if you can establish the relationship, then the security is there. So the feminine control is to see that the relationship remains. So that aspect you'll see. The point is, The spiritual is the feminine is doing that to please Krishna, because if the relationship is there, in other words, if Krishna is around, you can serve him in that way. But if he is not around, you can't serve him in that way. That makes sense. Well, here it's just because they want their own security. They're not really as worried about you're worried about the other person because they're yours. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just walk into the room, pick up the Gucci bag, throw it out the window, see the reaction. Right? You know, walk into the room, pick up the baby, throw it out the window. Similar reaction. Do you understand? Means that attachment, it's very similar. You know? But it won't be as intense. But the reaction is the same. Because it's theirs. The point is you're experiencing possession. So possession has a different feeling. But that's the feminine aspect, that the jiva trying to take on the masculine, unless he understands the nature, he can't appreciate. Because it's the female's sense of possession that seems to ruin it for the untrained male. Does that make sense?
I haven't quite got this.
See, it's like this. Energy, when you see it on the oscilloscope, how much of the time is it above the line? How much of the time is it below the line? Equal. Exactly equal. Why? And what is the oscilloscope testing?
Can we
energy. So that means that's the natural movement, feminine movement, right? How does a lightning bolt move, right? The zigzag, it's not straight. This idea of it being straight, that's not. The masculine is that line. The feminine is going above and below the line, right? Now, before possession, what does the man see? If we take it above the line is like nice and pleasant and interactive, below the line is grumpy. Okay? Now, before the girl has possession of the man, meaning emotionally, just getting to know, you're not sure if the relationship, how much do you see below the line?
Zero.
Not much, unless you're really a, really a, you know, there's words for it. Right? No? But now once she has possession, then you see both. That's the actual feminine nature. So the man who understands this appreciates that preliminary, but knows that that's not the reality. So therefore, when that sense of possession is there, then he knows that it's going to be nice and it's not going to be nice. You have to deserve it for it to be nice. But if you act properly, it will be nice. Right? And even if you act nice, it has to become unnice because that's just the natural flow. You can't go higher unless you go lower. I want to throw a rock. The farther back my arm goes, the farther forward it goes. That's just the way it works. Right? So the lower it goes means the higher it can go. But the man thinks once it crosses that bottom line, then that's it. There's something wrong with the relationship. So he gets bent out of shape and doesn't try to maintain the relationship. Right? But for the woman, that's what makes it go higher. So therefore, she'll keep trying in the negative direction because that's what makes it go positive. But if the man doesn't know what he's doing, then it just goes out the bottom. And then the wife files for divorce. Why? Because this man's useless. He can't be taken into the positive. The man thinks it's her fault. It's totally his fault. If she's the dependent one, then whose fault is it? You understand? So that's the whole point, is that rasa is a science. It's not in a, just, you know, as you please. It's a direct science. You can exactly say what's going on. Of course, it's a lot easier when it's someone else's life. Really easy when it's someone else's life. You can sit down, they tell you, no, this, that. Oh, it's this, this, this. Wow, how do you figure that out? Yeah, as long as it's not you, it's really easy to figure out. So that's why you want to start early, means figuring this out, not involved in it. Yes. Right? Because the thing is that submissiveness, is that's the whole point. Because the point is if he has that thing of submission, then what happens? If the woman follows the man, who has to be submissive first? This is the $64 million question. No man wants to answer it. But it's obvious. If you say the woman follows the man, he has to be submissive first. Then she'll be submissive. But it's not a one-time thing. Rasa's ongoing. So you constantly have that mood, she'll constantly have that mood. But her submission will always be greater. But if you don't balance it, it's not going to work. So anything. Oh, she's always, she doesn't trust me because you don't trust her. Anything. That all you have to do is sit down and listen to what the man complains about the woman, and you know all his faults. Right? Yeah. Yeah, so then you should be submissive to his guru. Tell him that one. Tell him, yeah, I agree. Yeah, and just tell him this. It says, and then if he gets upset with that, tell him, yeah, do you get in bed with your guru? So therefore, I should not get in bed with my guru. End discussion. It's like that. They can't, it's just, it's all games. It's just games that don't want to surrender, because that's why we're here. We want to be the controller and enjoyer. But the point is the actual controller and enjoyer, Krishna, what's his mood with his the gopis and the queens of Dwarka?
Steady and calm.
Yeah. Like that. That's what Rukmini is saying about... Is it Rukmini or Satyabhama? I think Satyabhama speaks. That he tolerates. That sometimes we take it over the line and this and that, but he tolerates it. Because they know they're crazy. See, that's the difference. Men think women are crazy, but women know they're crazy. So a man who knows they're crazy can actually deal with it. Right? Does that make sense? If you think they're crazy, it means you don't know what you're doing. Right? You know, you think it's a rock. Someone who knows it's a rock knows what to do with it. That's the difference.
When the women go on downside,
right?
Is it the man's idea of possession? It's my situation. It can't go below because it's mine. It's mine.
It's not so much that it's mine. Yeah, it's mine, but it's mine from just like my torque wrench is mine. It does what I say, how I want it, and all that. And if I break it, I broke it. And then I can, but like this, it's also just uncultured. But the point is you still have to deal, there's a nature. Because if it's yours, you still have to deal with it in a particular way. It's a lack of sensitivity. That's what it says. Preacher Maharaj is saying, sense control and sensitivity. If the man has that, then that will engender in the wife chastity and satisfaction. Right? If he's sense controlled, she'll be chaste. If he's sensitive, she'll be satisfied. That's how it works. It just one follows the other. Yes? How do I define crazy? But... Do I have to define the taste of a strawberry so it's for someone who's tasted a strawberry? No. So why are you asking? We're not talking clinical insane. Does that make sense? One word, one tone of voice can take something from the most ecstatic moment into complete, utter, insanity. Now is that normal? Now if a man was like that, what would you think? Would any woman agree to, sit around with a man who was like that? Every word, everything, you have to tiptoe around everything. Would that be? No, because men are supposed to be the stable. Does that make sense? You understand where we're talking here? Yeah, so the point is women know they're crazy, so they're just looking for a man who understands that and can work with it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, it's always funny. Just the reaction between the two. Yeah, the one's going... And the other's going. I always find that so interesting. Yes.
I read recently, as I recall the word.
Loudly.
I was reading recently in Mahabharata where there was a description of a woman by, I think, one apsara.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that the mind of a woman is incomprehensible, like a great sage. She was making like a great sage is incomprehensible.
Means in other words, her mind is incomprehensible. Means like the great sage means you can't tell what he's thinking. So it means someone else other than a woman can't tell what she's thinking. But there's a difference. She can't tell what she's thinking either. That's the point of the man. There's something to connect to. Right. It means if you go to a flagpole ceremony, right, they're raising the flag. What do you go to see, the pole or the flag? The flag. So, but why is the flag able to be appreciated? Because of the pole. Because otherwise you could throw a flag out in the air and if it's good enough breeze, it'd float around and go off into the distance. But it wouldn't be, it's like the throwing of the flag ceremony. Right? Because that's the point, is it's anchored. So therefore it can go this way and that way, and you can appreciate the energy. Right? Feminine means the expression of energy, because that's what it is. Masculine means the support of the energy so that it can be expressed. Does that make sense? These are just the mechanics how it works. You understand that, then all relationships with anything can work nicely. Because everything's working on this principle. Right? It means your masculine, the feminine, the conjugal is the most extreme of this. But you have, to some degree, you know, with mother, with daughter, with friend, it has the same volatility, but less, because it's not as intense. The greater you intensify it, the greater the volatility. Right? So that's the thing, is we want intensity, no volatility. The two go together. Does that make sense? That's why it's not real, how the men view it. So that's why we're saying one has to be trained in the masculine position. Because otherwise, one doesn't know it naturally. Right? So that's why it's a greater responsibility. That's why it talks about it. It means the girls that's mentioned, being trained as a girl, that's the easy thing. To be trained as a good girl, that takes some more work. But for the man, he has to be trained to be masculine and to be good. So it's two things. So that's very big. And to be good, that's the easier part. That's why if you know what you're doing, it's easy to train girls to be good. Right? Does that make sense? But men, teaching them to be good is not the hard part. Teaching them to be a man, that's the tough part. Because that they don't believe. They just don't believe that that's what the man has to do. Yeah, show him who's boss. You know, hey, don't let her. You know, every man is saying all that. And that's where every man is wrong. In fact, it's one of the rules. Taking advice from your friend on how to deal with the women who doesn't know how to deal with women is one of the causes women don't like that particular man. Does that make sense? So in other words, what we're expressing here is the real relationship between man and real relationship with woman. That's what Bhava and Rasa is explaining. So what we're saying is the science is the same. The difference is in the mentality. Because the man's trying to enjoy for himself, and the woman's trying to enjoy for themselves. But Krishna is trying to please the devotees, and the devotees are trying to please Krishna. That's the difference in the spiritual world. We take it, oh, the devotees are trying to please Krishna, and Krishna himself is just enjoying. No. Krishna's enjoying pleasing the devotees. Otherwise, if he's enjoying himself, then Atmarama, he doesn't need to expand the devotees. Right? He's already enjoying his Atmarama. But when he expands, that's when enjoyment actually becomes dynamic. Does that make sense? Yes.
In the pastime of Govardhan, the pastime of Govardhan, it becomes very evident that Rasa
will. Yeah, well, that's the whole point, is that in the Leela, then no one group of devotees is with Krishna all day. Mother Jashoda is in the morning and evening. The cowherd boys are at noon. A little bit in the morning and night, but restricted. Gopis are all night and at noon. But, you know, very restricted in the day, or not at all. So no one's lifting Govardhan. For 7 days, all the devotees are able to be with Krishna 24 hours. Right? And he's interacting with each one of them according to their rasa. Right? That's the whole thing. And it's not about him holding up the hill, right? Because then the coward boys and coward men are also putting their sticks. And Mother Jashoda is telling Nanda Baba, he's been holding for so long, now you hold it for a while. You know, let his arm have a rest. You know, so even they don't even really catch. And he's not going, no, Mom, I'm holding it up, you know, like that. Why do you always think that I can never do anything? You know, so you don't get all those, you know. Okay. Yes? No? Okay, so the one who possesses Rati is Ashraya, and the one who that love is directed for is Vishaya. Right? So, and Krishna is the object of the devotee's love, so he is the Vishaya. There's only one Vishaya, it's Krishna. Right? And then the devotees, it's all ashraya. But in whatever you're dealing with, it, the same principle works. You know? Like that. So this is alambana. Right? Basic cause. And udipana, awakening stimuli. So the basic cause is this, that someone has that affection for Krishna, and Krishna is there who that affection is directed at. So that's basic, right? See, it's generic, right? Okay. Vrajanath, as you have said, vibhava is divided into two, alambana, the basic cause of transcendental love, and udipana, items related to Krishna that stimulate the transcendental love. Alambana is again divided into two, vishaya, the object of love, and ashraya, the receptacle of love. You have mentioned that Krishna is the vishaya, and the devotee is the ashraya. Now a question arises, is it possible that Krishna may also be the ashraya of transcendental love? Goswami. Certainly, as we have mentioned previously, when the devotee loves Krishna, Krishna is the vishaya and the devotee is the ashraya. However, when Krishna loves the devotee, Krishna is the ashraya and the devotee is the vishaya. Right? But Krishna is the ashraya according to the ashraya of the devotee. That's why he says, as you surrender, he reciprocates. Mother Yashoda is the ashraya of parental rasa. Therefore, he responds as the child. Who therefore he has that affection towards his mother. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the other side of the relationship, parent and child. So it's within that. The cowherd boys are doing that within that friendship. So because they have that friendship to Krishna, Krishna responds with that friendship. The gopis have that conjugal, therefore Krishna responds with the conjugal. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
It seems that in the relationship, the jiva is the main person.
No, it's not so much so, because the point is, let's say we go to, you know, let's say we make it very formal, okay? You go to a very formal black tie event, okay? Who's the prominent, the men or the women? The men, you know, it's from their neck down to their toes, you know, they're dressed in black. Right? Why? So, and do the women have to wear black? No, they can wear anything they want. Why? Because it's about the women. You understand? Here you have something strong to connect it to. Right? But it's about the woman. Right? In the dance. Right? The man, you know, he's controlling the moves, but who's doing all the wild moves? The woman. The man's not jumping in the air and things like that. The woman is. Right? She's twirling around. She's bending over. She's doing all these things. You like that? Not the man. So it's all about showing off the woman. You understand? So the point is you can say, yes, they're the center, but they're not the center from that they're the center. Krishna's the center. But what goes around the center is what you notice. You don't notice the center. Like we have the bamboo in the middle of the courtyard there, and the bulls are walking around it. You notice the pole or the bulls? So that's the thing, is you notice that. That's what's fun for Krishna. Because Krishna is the center of all those unlimited relationships, so he's involved in every one of them. We're only involved in ours. So that's why we're not exactly the center. Center means everything goes around you. But no, it all goes around Krishna. So we taste our, Krishna tastes that, but he also tastes all the others that we don't taste. You know what I'm saying? So like that. So simultaneously, it is the prominence, but at the same time, we're not. Because it's Krishna, if he doesn't respond, then what do we do? Krishna doesn't respond as Mother just showed his child, what does she do? You understand? You know, it's like that. It means the guy is totally overwhelmed by the celebrity. Followers are around everywhere. And so, but she doesn't appreciate that. So how does it end up? Right? There's a court order, right? You know, so many hundred feet. Right? Because it's not, so the point is because he reciprocates, that's what makes it something. You know what I'm saying? So many girls are interested in that particular guy. But he only interacts with the one. So she becomes the prominent, and the others then take the. So the point is the masculine is there; he's the primary, but the feminine is the secondary. You can't separate, and that's why we don't want to separate the two, You know, it's all about one or it's all about the other, because you have to have both. But you have to know which one is in which position and how it takes prominence. You want to have a nice arrangement, you know, you want to have a nice festival, so the arrangements have so much to do with it. But it's not the arrangements that make the festival, it's the attitude of the mood of dealing in that festival that makes the festival. Right? So we make the mistake, you know, it's like, let's say, you know, the big kirtan person comes and, you know, it's a wild kirtan and they do all kinds of crazy stuff they normally don't do. So then at the next kirtan after they've left, what are the brahmacharis doing? All that crazy stuff, because they think that's what makes the kirtan. No, that came as that was a manifestation of a mood. So they do it once, they do it twice, it's fun. But after, you know, 3 or 4 months, 6 months, so many years, it gets a bit old. You know, because it doesn't carry the mood. It's like, hey, we're doing this, that, and everyone should get excited. But no one gets excited. What's wrong with these guys, you know? This is a good kirtan. They don't know what good kirtan is. No, it's... Yeah? Does that make sense? So you have to have both. But one has to know how it's functioning. So that's what this science is telling, how rasa functions. Right? Vrajanath, we have heard of the 64 qualities of Krishna from Gurudev. Is there anything more you would like to tell us on this subject? Right? Because the 64 qualities are the Udipan of Krishna. Right? Goswami, Sri Krishna is the repository of unlimited excellences, which are manifest in him to an absolute degree. Yet, because of the varieties on the absolute platform, the excellences of Sri Krishna are displayed in differing intensities. In Dwarka, the excellences are Purna, complete. In Mathura, the excellences are Purna Tara, more complete. And in Goloka Vrindavan, the excellences are Purna Tama, most complete. According to the time, place, and mood of the Leela, the manifestation of the excellences and the character of Sri Krishna also vary correspondingly. In his Leela, Krishna is always the Nayaka, hero, of which there are four types, Dhirodatta, Dhiralalita, Dhiraprashanta, and Dhirodatta. Right? Means, in other words, all his these are the personalities. Now they'll be manifest, as he says, in different situations. So there'll be these four manifest in Vrindavan, these four in Mathura, these four in Dwarka. Right? And so when we say Dwarka, that is the origin of Vaikuntha. So it includes everything else. Does that make sense? Right? Then he has his different ages. So you'll have these manifest at the different ages. Right? Does that make sense? So like this, then you, and then applying it into the different rasas. So that makes sense? So this is where you get all the various combinations of Krishna's mood. We'll see if he gives it here a number, but basically it comes up to, I think, like 96. Because you're combining each one of these. Right? The Dhirodatta Nayaka is naturally very grave, gentle, forgiving, merciful, and okay, Dhirodatta. Dhirodatta and Dhirodatta means it's a double D, right? Dhirodatta, right? While the other one is Dhirodatta. I think it's Dhira Udatta.
It's also in long baby.
And Dhira, I'm not sure how the grammar works, but
that's elongated A that could signify.
Yeah, Dhirodatta and Dhirodatta. Yeah, okay. So this is the first one. Naturally very grave, gentle, forgiving, merciful, compassionate, determined, humble, highly qualified, chivalrous, and physically attractive. Right? So this Rupa Goswami gives in Nectar Devotion that this is the natural form that one could relate to, giving this as an example, is Lord Ramachandra. Yeah. Right? Krishna manifests this, but he's like the fullest manifest. It means that is all he manifests, basically. It means the others will be there, but, you know, like when he's chastising Ravana, then the last one will be there, but in like this. The Dhira Lalita Nayaka is naturally funny, witty, and expert in joking, ever full of youthfulness, a relisher of rasa, very submissive to his lovers, and extremely confident of himself, and thus free from all anxieties. Right? So this means you see Krishna with the gopis. Right? That's the natural form. Right? Does that make sense? Funny, witty, expert and jokey, full of youthfulness, relisher of rasa, very submissive to his lovers. Right? That's the mood of the men. And extremely confident in himself. Because he's so confident, he can be submissive, because he's not going to lose himself. The men that, no, you got to show her his boss, are not confident. Because otherwise, why do you have to show her his boss? You are boss. The woman has no problem that the man's boss. Right? She's not going to say it, but it's understood. She knows who's boss. But the point is if he has to say he's boss, then that means he's not boss. That's why she gets upset when he says he's boss, because that means he's not boss, and he's supposed to be boss. Right? That's the problem. That's why the mode of ignorance, you get it, everything gets backwards. You know, that's the whole thing. Because where are these subjects taking place? Where are the men sitting around discussing all this? Down at the bar, right? So what's happening in the bar? That's called the mode of ignorance. So that's the problem.
It's the same with the professors at the university talking about science, but they're totally mental.
Yes, yeah, all these things. Yeah, just okay. So Dhira Prasanta Nayaka is naturally very peaceful, forbearing in desires, distress, and troubles, considerate and obliging to all. So, example Rupa Goswami gives there is Maharaj Yudhishthir, right? Because he always is in trouble, distress. But he's always considerate and obliging to all, even though, you know, it means he's out in the forest, and then some kings show up like that. He could say, hey, I'm out in the forest, give us a break, right, you know? But no, he tries to arrange nicely for them and sits them down and, you know, as if he's in court, but now, you know, everyone sits on a rock instead of, you know, on a nice solid gold throne with, you know, inlaid with jewels. The Dhirodhata Nayaka is envious and jealous, arrogant, deceitful, easily angered, restless, complacent, boastful, and ostentatious. The example is given of Krishna with Poundrika. He's saying that the black snake Krishna is going to swallow up this frog Poundrika, you know, because he's saying, I'm God, and this and that. And so Krishna's come like that. So he gets that very... Balaram manifests this a lot. You know, like when the residents of Hastinapur upset him, then he just stuck his plow in the ground and started to drag the city to throw it into the Jamuna, right? So then it's kind of like, you know, this that's Dhirodhata, right? You know. Okay. Vrajanath, quite a few belligerent and also mutually contradictory qualities were mentioned. How are all of these possible in the personality of just one person? Right? So Krishna has all these four, right? And so then, and within each one of them is contradictory to the other, and within each one they're contradictory, right? Because, yeah. Goswami, Sri Krishna possesses absolute power and opulence. By his inconceivable potency, all these conflicting qualities and antipodes are perfectly harmonized in his character. There are sufficient references in the scripture substantiating this point. Okay, so now it's 8:30. We'll stop here. We'll start on Monday with the, what do you call it? All the conflicting qualities and antipodes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Trinitai Gaura Premananda.
Thank you. type of thing. Yeah.